This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Jeff Bosser. Our technical director today is Henry Frain, the producer for the program, Harriet Williamson. In the past few years, major sports, including track and field, cycling, and but most significantly, Major League Baseball, have seen a number of reports and dozens of rumors about athletes using performance-enhancing drugs. The biggest names to come out of this controversy have included Major League Baseball's home run leader Barry Bonds, who's been connected to the BALCO, or Bay Area Lab Cooperative, investigation and was indicted on perjury charges, the cyclist Floyd Landis, who's tested positive for doping, and track star Marion Jones, who's currently serving a jail sentence and was forced to surrender Olympic medals after she pleaded guilty to perjury charges. She eventually admitted to taking steroids prior to the 2000 Summer Olympics. But the focus has been largely on baseball, and became even more so last December. That's when the Mitchell Report was released. The 400-page document was the result of a 20-month investigation by former Senate Majority Leader George Mitchell and named 89 current and former Major League Baseball players as having taken performance-enhancing drugs. And other sports, including football, have not gone untouched by this controversy. Joining us by phone to discuss the Mitchell Report and potential impact on baseball, as well as some other stories on steroid use, is New York Times sports reporter Michael Schmidt, who covered the Mitchell Report last year. Good afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Joining us in the studio is former Major League Baseball player Darren Fletcher. He was a catcher with the Montreal Expos, Toronto Blue Jays, Philadelphia Phillies, and Los Angeles Dodgers. Mr. Fletcher is also a native of East Central Illinois and played baseball for the University of Illinois. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Also here in the studio, Josh Whitman. He's a former pro football player with the Buffalo Bills, San Diego Chargers, Seattle Seahawks, and Miami Dolphins, and a current University of Illinois law student. His recent paper on the University of Illinois Law Review advocated Congress's efforts to get involved in the enforcement of performance-enhancing drugs in sports. Thanks for coming along.
Appreciate the invitation. Thanks.
Thank you. Let's turn first to our phone guest, Michael Schmidt. What was your earliest coverage of this issue? I know you covered the Mitchell Report last year, but when did you first come across this or have to interview players or anyone else about the alleged use of steroids in sports?
I started covering the issue pretty intensely towards the beginning of last summer, towards the middle of last summer, when a few media companies sued the government to have the documents that were used to go after Kurt Radomski, the main source of the names in the Mitchell Report, to have those documents unsealed. That's when I really started covering this issue and pretty much stayed with it all the way up to the Mitchell Report, and which has now turned into Roger Clemens and other things. So that's my history with it.
The Mitchell Report surfaced after, after the book Game of Shadows, that book in 2006 that chronicled alleged use of steroids and human growth hormone by Barry Bonds. The authors of the book conducted a two-year investigation of BALCO, the lab mentioned earlier. Talk about the Mitchell Report and if it was the document that you were expecting. Did it live up to his expectations?
Yeah, I mean, I think, a lot of attention was given to the names in the report. I think that's what most people will remember it for. I think it also had some very detailed insight into how Major League Baseball and the union dealt with the issue for so many years. And I think it was fairly critical of them, but that criticism was not as absorbed by the public because there was so much attention paid to the names and Roger Clemens and the other stars that were in there. So it's interesting, if you actually look through the report, you actually read the report, a lot of stuff that, it raises many questions about, the way baseball dealt with the problem. So that was sort of, I found that interesting, but I don't know if the average reader did.
Let me turn to my in-studio guests. Mr. Fletcher, have you had a chance to read through it, and what were your initial impressions?
Well, I haven't had a chance to read through the whole thing. I think it was a 400-page document. I'm a former player, so, I was interested just like the rest of the general public was. I mean, really, who was in it? What were the names and what was said and who was implicated in the whole thing? I think it made good news, but I think the Mitchell Report's really just kind of getting to the point where it helps the healing process, I guess, where it probably need to happen. Is it going to solve a whole lot? Maybe it's going to put pressure on Major League Baseball and the union to try to have some more tougher drug testing programs. But I know one thing as a former player and a current player, you didn't want to have your name in it. I know that.
And let's turn to our other guest here. And did you look at this report? I mean, I know you obviously have studied up on this issue as far as use in major sports, I guess, including alleged use in football. And, you know, what kind of thoughts did you have after this report came out? And is baseball sort of being singled out?
I did have a chance to look at it. It is a pretty long document, but I got a chance to look through what I thought were the most relevant parts. And, I think baseball is, to some degree, being singled out. I've had a lot of people ask me that as a former football player. I think there's a consensus among some people that maybe baseball is being unfairly singled out as opposed to some of the other sports that have come under criticism. But, you know, I think baseball, whether it's right or wrong, has been sort of the one out in front on this whole thing, and so it's come under a little extra criticism than maybe it deserves to have been.
Mr. Schmidt, the season is here, and attendance is continuing to surge. Do you expect any kind of fallout soon on the part of Players Association, anyone else that is in charge of disciplining these players?
You know, the Players Association and the Commissioner's Office are very close to a deal on adopting many of the recommendations in the Mitchell Report. They appear hung up on an issue where the Commissioner would like the players named in the report to pay some type of fine, at least some players named in the report, to pay some type of fine or have to go to counseling. But it appears, you know, within the next few days, if not today, that both sides will put into, you know, will have agreed to a new testing program, which will adopt many of the recommendations in the report. Both sides are, you know, very skittish about having to get called back in front of Congress, and have sort of gone to the table and hammered this thing out. And there's a small issue in the way, and after that is resolved, you know, they'll have a deal.
Well, that include, I mean, one of the problems, I guess, with this is deciding what to test for. And HGH, won't that require a blood test of some sort?
You know, it's unclear how reliable the blood test for HGH is. It only finds HGH in your system, you know, if it's been there for a short period of time. And it doesn't really make sense to draw blood from all these baseball players, and there's issues around that. What baseball and the other leagues could do is they could freeze all the urine and at a later date come back and test the urine for HGH when there's a urine test for HGH, but no league wants to do that. They all say it's too cumbersome, but it sort of appears like those leagues don't want to have to be dealing with, you know, some guy, you know, who was using HGH in 2008, 10 years from now, when that comes out. So they've put that issue aside.
We're talking with a few guests regarding the used or alleged use of steroids in sports. Michael Schmidt is our guest from the New York Times. We have former Major League catcher Darren Fletcher, as well as Josh Whitman, the former player in the NFL and current U of I law student. If you have any questions for our comments for our guest, 333-9455 is one of the numbers in the Champaign area, and outside is 800-222-9455. Let me turn, I guess, next to Mr. Fletcher and talk a bit about your era. I mean, you played in, the 90s was your prominent career. I mean, we put up the most prominent numbers. Was there a time when you suspected some players started putting up phenomenal numbers, somebody hitting 50 home runs out of the blue that what kind of things did you hear maybe that may have been unfair from the media, or, you know, speculated yourself that someone may have been using one of these substances?
Well, I mean, majority of my career was spent in the 90s. You know, there's always like whispers and rumors, but, you know, this whole thing, even though I played in the steroid era, it wasn't like that it was something that we just sat around and discussed at the training table. You know, it's just, yeah, I guess it's like baseball is, I guess, just like society. I mean, you're not going to sit around and talk about who's using drugs and who isn't when you're just having casual conversation with the guys. We didn't think about that. I mean, at least I didn't run around in those circles where the conversation came up much. Sure, we heard the rumors, or maybe a guy looked a little bigger or whatever. But if you go back and think about the history of baseball at that time, I mean, not only when you think about the home runs, Major League Baseball, a lot of these, I think there's a lot of factors with all the home runs. I mean, steroids probably had something to do with it, but if you can remember, they were building new fields, Jeff. You know, everything was, it was going towards, they were getting rid of all these cookie cutter stadiums like St. Louis, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, and they were wanting to have these smaller seating, but a lot more of a cozier atmosphere, kind of like a Wrigley Field. So what happened in the 90s is they were building all these smaller ballparks. It was easier to hit home runs in these ballparks. The balls might have been a little bit harder. They also, Major League Baseball, allowed, instead of always using ash for years, they've always used ash for the wood, they decided to let maple in Major League Baseball. And maple is a very hard wood. They expanded the league. They added four more teams. And when you expand the league, when pitching is already at a premium at that time when there was 26 teams, when you add more teams, you dilute the pitching. So instead of facing four guys that are pretty darn nasty, now you're facing maybe two per staff. We had a renaissance of power hitters in the 90s. Now, is steroids have something to do with that? Sure, it probably had something to do with some of those home runs. But there was a lot of factors and a lot of intangibles that played into to numbers exploding in the 90s.
On top of all that, they added the 90s is when they expanded the playoff system. They added the wild card and gave, I guess it added to the whole the fan aura of having more teams having a chance at a playoff spot later in the season and
right.
and all as an opportunity to lure in more fans.
I mean, those numbers don't go on the regular season, but if you're just sitting there saying, well, why is guys all of a sudden now hitting 50 home runs when they hit 30, or when you think about back in the 70s and 80s, the guys were leading the leagues with 35 home runs, I think the small ballparks, maybe a little harder balls, harder bats definitely, diluted pitching had something to do with it. I think that a lot of people, when they're going to look back at the 90s, they're going to say, oh, well, everyone was jacked up on HGH and steroids, and that's why they hit home runs. It's not true.
Michael Schmidt, what I started to discuss about the book Game of Shadows, the authors seem to allege that what got them started on this is that Barry Bonds, was alleged again to have been attracted to steroid use following the 1998 home run chase of rather of Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. Could this be looked upon as, you know, what began at least the speculation, if not more investigation of alleged steroid use?
I think that throughout the mid 90s, you started to see players start to use it and other players turn around and say, you know, what's going on here? Some of the stuff that's been said about Roger Clemens, even by Jose Canseco, has been, that Roger was baffled by, you know, some of the hits guys were getting off of him, that, you know, the way that you're able to hit the ball so far. And, it appears like Canseco says that bothered Clemens. So there's, you know, sort of you started to see people use, and you started to see people question and say, you know, what's really going on here? And then the problem was that the media didn't really catch on to it until many years later. They totally missed the story.
Let's turn to our other in studio guest, Josh Whitman. We've been talking about baseball primarily, and you briefly mentioned that, you know, the Mitchell report and other allegations have maybe unfairly shut out other sports. Talk about football and perhaps what you know about alleged steroid use and what you think maybe should be more brought to the forefront regarding football.
Well, I don't know if there's any real secrets about football. I think, you know, the thing that I think that baseball gets caught with is this historical statistical analysis. There's no other sport like baseball that allows you to compare generations of players based on their statistics, home runs, batting average, wins and losses. And there's nothing like that in football to get people caught up and excited about, well, what's this going to do to the record book? And so that's one of the things, one of the factors I think that people get excited about with baseball is that you have these numbers. And that's always one of the questions is, well, what do we do with all these records? Right. And in football, that just doesn't exist. And so I think that's another reason that football, for one reason or another, has sort of stayed under the radar in large part during this whole thing. And more than that, too, I think when it all started to hit, you saw that football, at least initially, had probably the strongest testing program in professional sports at that time. And I don't know if it still is today, but at least back when the steroid scandal first broke in baseball, I think football was sort of looked at as kind of the model program. And so for whatever reason, again, football has stayed largely under the radar. And I think also there's a part of it that I wonder if people sort of assume it just happens in football because of the power that's involved and because of the players. And so I don't know that there's maybe the element of surprise that would come with baseball, for example. I wonder if people just think that, well, of course they're using steroids because it's such a big physical, violent sport. In terms of my personal experience, though, you know, I can say that I'm not naive enough to think that nobody I played with used these things, but I never saw or heard anything that led me to believe that these things were happening.
Talk about the paper you wrote for the U of I's Law Review and why you think that a congressional effort would be, you know, all sports would be better served by having it taken care of and enforced outside of the realm of the people that manage the major sports.
Well, it's you know, there's a lot of different parts of the argument, but I think the biggest element to it is in the paper I used law and economics to investigate whether Congress should get involved in regulating steroids in sports. And the argument I made was that the incentives are such in professional sports and the window of opportunity is so small that it's unrealistic for us to expect the athletes to refrain from these opportunities to make to make the kind of money that can allow them to change their lives and generations of lives. And when this window of opportunity continues to shrink, you know, career lengths are so short, the money is so big, and that when these players get into this position in baseball, for example, the difference between being a 225 hitter and a 275 hitter is one hit out of every 20 at-bats. The margins are so small that if faced with those incentives, I just argue in the paper that it's unrealistic for us to expect the athletes to police themselves.
Have you had any dialogue with members of Congress or others that would have a role in advocating this kind of?
No, I haven't. Some of my colleagues at the law school are more politically plugged in than I am, I suppose, and they've forwarded the paper on to some people in Congress. But I don't expect anything to come.
Michael Schmidt, I want to return back to what you had mentioned. At the start of the show, you talked about the possibility of some kind of policy being put in place by the Major League Baseball's Players Association. I guess related to this is there were two suspensions that were supposed to be served at the start of the season involving two players, Jose Guillen and Jay Gibbons, although he was released by his team this weekend, so I don't know how much of a concern it is. Are you familiar with these cases? And I assume that there's a direct role in suspensions to be served out and, you know, when they'll start based on this policy being put in place.
Well, Gibbons and Guillen were suspended before the Mitchell Report was released for being linked to the use of performance-enhancing drugs in published reports. What happened was that they were named a week later in the Mitchell Report, and then, as negotiations have gone on, you know, then Mitchell said no one that was named in the report should be suspended. And then when the union and the commissioner's office were negotiating, they agreed, a tentative agreement right now is that no one named in the report will be suspended. So what what will happen is they'll take those suspensions off the books. The problem is that there's no agreement in place right now. So what they had to do was they had to stay the suspensions for the first week and a half of the season. So their suspensions are on hold while the Players Association, the commissioner's office, try to work out a new deal, you know, an agreement. In that agreement, no one named in the report will be suspended. So that's the situation there.
What's it like working in New York, where you have a city that, where one of the players, Jason Giambi, actually came forward and admitted to the use of performance-enhancing drugs? And other than that, also some speculation about players, namely Alex Rodriguez, is apparently going to be named in an upcoming book from Jose Canseco. What kind of things do you hear in that city?
You know, New York, with, you know, all of the media outlets and everything, there's a big appetite for, you know, uncovering dirt on, you know, on people and you know, tying them to these substances and putting out, you know, stories like that. I don't think the average reader is terribly excited by the ins and outs of drug testing and dynamics of how baseball and the other sports deal with it. But, you know, if you could produce a name every day, you know, there'd be a lot of people that would want to read it. And there's a lot of pressure for that. You know, we hear different things, and you follow up on them, and, you know, a lot of times they don't make it into the paper.
Darren, did you see things getting to this level when you were a player? And you said that the Mitchell Report was probably needed to bring some peace or bring some sense to the situation. But did you see the things coming down to something that required an extensive investigation by someone outside of Major League Baseball?
I mean, I don't know. I think it served its purpose. You know, I think it's a way of, I guess, healing or cleansing or something. You know, the players, I mean, first, I think it's cheating. I mean, that's the thing, is that I think that if you do use performance-enhancing drugs, I think that it's cheating, and I think the integrity of the game is compromised when you have a portion of the players doing it. So it needed to – something needed to be done, you know. Did I foresee something like this happening? I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I really, to be honest with you, wouldn't begin to speculate on how many people that I thought were on it or what the percentage was. I think in some of the reports, I think I think some of those percentages are too high. But I think in the 90s, there were some of the stars of the 90s were on performance-enhancing drugs. And those were the big names, some big-name guys that you'd see in the paper that were hitting the home runs. They were probably dabbling in that. So I think really the vast majority of players were not using, I think the true victims of this whole era, too, is the guys that were clean, because if you played in the steroid era, then they think that, well, since I played in the 90s or guys played in the 90s, that, well, you must have been using and your numbers are skewed because of it. So that I think that's something I think even Senator Minchel said before he even let off that congressional hearing when he, you know, read the 400-page report. So, you know, yeah, it was probably necessary, but I think Major League Baseball, I'm still part of Major League Baseball and doing some broadcasts for the Toronto Blue Jays, and I think that Major League Baseball is clean. I think that guys understand now that the importance and the role that they play kind of in society, and they don't want to be any part of this. I mean, if you're labeled a steroid user or a HGH user, it's like a scarlet letter on your chest, Josh. You know what I'm saying? You don't want any part of that because your name's never going to get out of the paper. And even if you dabbled in it for a knee injury for a week, they're going to think that your whole career you were using it, and that's the reason why you won 20 ball games or you hit 200 home runs. So I think if this whole thing just changed the mindset of the players on just waking them up and saying, don't do it, because if we get you, your reputation is going to be tarnished, I think it's done its job.
Does it seem unfair, or was there anything about you felt about the Mitchell Report that was largely, it's based on interviews, I guess, with right. Brian McNamee, who I assume you were familiar with during your right. days with Toronto, and Kirk right. Radomski, who was a bat boy and former employee with the New York Mets, that these two guys were interviewed, and it produced, 80-plus names.
Right. I mean, did it bother me that they just used those two names?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think it bothered some people in Congress that they were relying on at least McNamee. I mean, he didn't look too reliable on those in that congressional hearing. I mean, they kind of made him look like a bit of a fool with all the lies that he had told over the time, but, you know.
Well, I don't think they had a lot of choice either. I think they were having a really hard time getting cooperation from players. You know, certainly the players weren't going to name their former teammates. And I think they were looking at the end of the day either having essentially nothing or coming back with these two guys who had provided really the only substantive information that they had been able to find.
We welcome your calls or comments regarding sports and steroids. We're talking with Darren Fletcher, former big league player, Josh Whitman, former NFL player and U of I law student, as well as Michael Schmidt with the New York Times. 333-9455 around the Champaign-Urbana area, or 800-222-WILL are the phone numbers. Josh, I wonder if you could talk a bit more about maybe the days of football when it was more enforced, and when it seemed like any kind of enforcement period or a sport that was dominant in steroid use was more dominated by football, because this issue certainly wasn't in the news like it is today with Major League Baseball.
You mean
as far as how it dominated other sports for a while, but we're probably talking a couple decades ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think steroids, I think, burst on the scene. The first I remember them in the sports context was really with Ben Johnson in the Olympics back in 1988. And then ever since then, I think you've started, and that doesn't mean that was the first time they were used, obviously, but that was the first time I think they came sort of to the national forefront. And then after that, you had Lyle Alzado, the football player in the early 1990s, who came out and said that he felt that his steroid use in the 70s and 80s had contributed to his brain cancer that eventually took his life. And so I think people started to become more aware of these substances being out there, being used. And then baseball with the home run race in 98, and when McGuire first came out with the Andro situation, I think that sort of opened everybody's eyes to maybe there's something else going on here. And so it's been interesting to watch the progression, because I don't think anybody wants to admit that this is a part of what's going on. I remember in 98 watching the home run race and being so excited at, as everybody was, at what was going on in the field. And it never occurred to me, even being a football player, that maybe steroids are involved in this. And I think everybody had that same thought. Nobody wanted to admit that this isn't just one of the greatest things in sports history, that there might be something chemically involved. And so it's been really interesting to watch the historical progression.
You mentioned Lyle Alzado. Has everyone's, just since you had just mentioned him, has anyone's, the amount of steroid used or allegedly used by someone, will have any long-term health effects? Or are we talking about a massive amount that would put someone in danger like it did the football player we mentioned?
Well, and that's another point I raised in my paper as well. There are some people that argue that steroids, and more specifically HGH, when used in proper moderation, when used under a doctor's supervision, actually contribute to having a higher quality of life. And so, there's a lot of, it's not a small number of people that say that, we should let athletes use these substances, that we enjoy seeing people hit the ball 500 feet, and we enjoy seeing somebody that's 6'4 and can run a 4'4 on the football field. There's a certain element of the sports fans that enjoy that element, and they don't care what causes it. They don't care if it's chemically enhanced. They don't care what materials are being used, whether it's an aluminum bat or a maple bat or whatever it might be. They just want to see incredible athletic accomplishment, and they don't care how it happens.
We've got a caller on the line, line 4 in Geneva. Go ahead with your question, please.
Yeah, it's too bad society thinks that way. I think today's society is at win at all costs. It's not about, winning, doing your best without enhancing yourself. It's about win at all costs, and, you know, losers, you know, be damned, basically. I used to be a Little League coach years ago, and I could tell you just from my experience is that the society, the people I had to deal with is, you know, is to the point they'll do anything to win because they see that scholarship sign, they see the dollar signs, they see what baseball, basketball, and football brings into the sport. I mean, it's the money aspect and the money aspect only about steroids in every sport. And that's the problem. And then you've got this with these, Botox injections for people to make themselves look good. Well, who started this whole thing in the first place? It was Hollywood. It was some of the media. I think it's just ridiculous how far out of whack this country has got with this. Am I out of whack on saying this?
Anyone care to respond?
As far as the Little League, I mean, after I retired, I know that it's very competitive out there. I think the will to win at the Little League level sometimes surpass the will to win at the Big League level by some of the parents and coaches. I think you're right. I think sometimes that we kind of lose the honest fun of competing. I've seen that as I've retired. I think that the youth level takes the game way too seriously, and the will to win is too strong for the parents. I don't know what it is. I think it's more of the parents know the other side, and it's like, well, my kid beat your kid, so that gives them some sort of thrill. But I don't think parents are looking at dollar signs at 12 years old. Maybe, you know, they want them to get good, but I think it's just some sort of weird obsession that they feel that they're dominant over another parent or something like that. You know what I'm talking about, Josh?
Yeah.
And they just get too crazy. That's something that just needs to change, and I think that when you're part of Little League programs, that's why you need to, you know, pick good coaches, because the coaches are the ones that kind of set the tone for the whole thing. And if they've got some skewed kind of weird agenda that they just want to win and win and win and embarrass, you know, 12-year-old kids on the other side, then he's the wrong guy. As far as like, what, Botox or something like that? I don't know. I mean, I don't know how to comment on that, but I mean, obviously it's a problem, and you're right. You need to get the chemicals out of the game. And I think that Major League Baseball has taken the steps. It was far behind. It kind of, I don't know, I wouldn't say that it turned its back, because I think a lot of the people, really, it's, you know, you think about drug use, it's always the parents that are last to know, you know, and the parents were the GMs and the owners. And they didn't know. I mean, they may have had whispers, but they're worried about selling tickets and signing free agents and doing all this, that, and the other. And it was us, the kids, the players that, you know, you just, it's sometimes, and I think you're right, Josh, it's, I don't know if the players can police themselves, because at that level,
The incentives are
unbelievable to succeed, so they'll try anything to get an edge. And I think that there is still a majority of players that are playing, even at that time, were playing by the rules and some sort of, you know, strong moral fiber that they had inside to say, you know what, I just don't think that that's right.
If we could turn back to our phone guest, Michael Schmidt, I wanted to ask him if any of your coverage has involved younger athletes, either at the high school or collegiate level, and some of that win-at-all-costs drive behind athletes younger than the ones you're normally covering.
Yeah, we've seen high schools, some high school state high school associations across the country begin to test for drugs. But those programs don't look too serious. They don't look very rigorous. The NCAA has drug testing, but that program itself does not appear too serious either. So there's sort of, you know, stuff in place, but nothing that appears to be working as a deterrent. You know, they say that the levels of, you know, young adult use is, you know, higher than it's ever been, and that's why Congress says they got involved in this matter. But, you know, I think it's pretty difficult to really quantify these things. But that was the opening Congress saw, to say that they could involve themselves, that if they could clean up baseball, they could send a message. So, yeah, that's you know, what it looks like at the youth level.
I wanted to touch on something that happened last week involving the San Francisco Giants, and this is obviously linked to alleged steroid use. But AT&T Park now in San Francisco. They've eliminated some of the signs around that area that indicate that Barry Bonds played there, and don't have any more signage to indicate 756 home runs and the home run champion. And Peter McGowan, the GM of the team, wants to move in a new direction. I assume we'll see more of this, but it still came across pretty surprising. Michael?
You know, the Giants, Barry Bonds broke his record. The Giants sold a lot of tickets, and then Barry Bonds was indicted. And Giants have their money. Mr. Bonds has his record. And, no one else wants to sign Barry Bonds. And they want to put as much distance between, people want to be as far away from him as possible, it appears like. The union said they were going to investigate that the owners were colluding not to sign him. But no one wants to touch him because he's under federal indictment and will likely go on trial at some point in 2009. And although that won't affect this season, still, it's a tough thing to explain to fans, especially people with young children, about signing Barry Bonds. I think some of these people see it as a public relations problem.
Anyone else care to comment on what you do about not just Bonds, but anyone who is whose name has been prominently linked to these allegations and maybe on your current roster or have just been traded away?
Well, as far as Barry, I think Michael's got it right. I mean, no one's going to touch him right now. I mean, he's 43 years old. He's got his record. He's basically a DH now. Probably an American League team would take a chance on him, but I don't know if the guy's indicted. I don't think they want to mess around with that kind of stuff. And the PR, you're right, the public relations problem that you'd have having him on the roster. And Barry is a, Barry's not a guy that when you sign on the team, he's just going to stand over in the corner and just kind of behave. he is a dynamic person. And then when Barry's in the clubhouse, it's going to be all about, the media and everything's all going to be about Barry. And it takes away from kind of the team's mission on trying to win games. And I think that's why San Francisco, they want to turn the page because I think that, I think that was a big distraction for them over the last couple of years. And they want to get on the business of having a new team and trying to win some ball games in San Francisco.
We got a caller on their cell phone. Line one, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm curious. I have a statement I'd like to make. I think that more often than not, parents who allow their kids to utilize, steroids and stuff like that, they seem to be, at least from the ones I've, come in contact with, or at least assume that their kids are on steroids. They're decent. Law-abiding, go to church on Sunday type of people, yet they seem to have this thing in their morality where they don't think that what they're doing is cheating. They think it's, just basically getting an edge or getting a leg up, Does that just seem to be the case with most people you come in contact with that have this, I think it's a malady.
Anybody want to respond?
Well, I think there was a time, though, that it was perceived like that. I mean, the guys that were using in the 90s, I think that they just felt that they were just getting a leg up. They were just getting an edge. I mean, they felt that they were already good enough, but they just needed a little something more to put them over the top to kind of bust through into maybe superstardom or bust through from AAA player to be a big league player. So I think that probably was the mindset for a lot of guys, but part of this whole process of figuring out what was going on, exposing it for what it is, I think this is all a part of I don't know, I mean, just a healing process or the fact that we need to just change the whole mindset of Major League Baseball and the players. They should realize that it isn't. A majority of the fans and the public don't think that it's just getting an edge. They think it's cheating. And I think Major League Baseball and the players got the message.
We've got one more call. I'd ask you to be brief if you could. Line two in Champaign, go ahead.
I guess I have a comment. I think it's so easy to associate Barry Bonds with this problem in baseball. But I And I'll tell you what, Roger Clemens, no Mr. Congeniality. And quite frankly, I think he lied in front of Congress. And so it's just not Barry Bonds. It's a lot of guys and many who haven't even been scrutinized that used drugs. Thank you.
Well, one thing I might want to mention, too, is that Brian McNamee, and I don't know if you want to address this, Darren, is that he revealed more information as the hearing went on regarding Mr. Clemens. And there it's not as if he was had come forward with all this information right away. He finally said, oh, yeah, I've got this to tell. And I know at least one congressman said, I don't believe you.
Right.
So it's...
It was like, you know, who are you going to believe? And I mean, the caller is right. I mean, it, you know, Barry seemed like he was kind of the poster child for this whole thing sometimes is kind of unfairly singled out on the whole thing because he is indicted over it. And he was really kind of the big fish in this whole thing that they wanted to get after. I think at first, though, they wanted McGuire, and then McGuire kind of rode off in the sunset and wouldn't talk about it. But Barry kept on playing, and Barry was also approaching a very hallowed record. People just didn't want to see him break Hank Aaron's record, thinking that the guy was on steroids and then it would ruin it. So I think a lot of people wanted to try to bring him down. And, you know, Barry kept plugging away. You got to hand it to him with all the problems and all the media hype. He kept going at it and staying healthy, and he hit the home runs. And in some ways, he's unfairly singled out because he wasn't the only one, you're right. And I think but he was probably the biggest name, and I think that's why the people jumped on that. Now, once Roger Clemens' name was mentioned in some of this, then the heat was kind of off Barry, and everybody kind of turned their attentions to the Rocket Man. I don't know. I don't know who to believe. Well, you just have to figure out. I don't know what's going to happen with Roger. I mean, he's going to be gone. For me, I think the biggest thing is this society is a very forgiving society that we live in. I mean, does anyone hear from like Giambi much anymore when he kind of just said, hey, I'm sorry? He's still playing. He's moving on. We don't really care. The thing of it, as a former player that didn't use steroids, but if I did, I would have just said, you know what? I'm sorry. I made a big mistake. I would have realized the error of my ways and apologized to the public and to the fans. And I really believe that people would forgive me if they believed me and said that. And I told them that I was going to be clean and I was going to go out and give money to Steroid Foundation or something. I think people would move on. But when the evidence looks like you did it and you just keep saying no, it just stirs the pot and people just want to get you. And I think that that's the problem. Some of these guys just should have just fessed up and said, I'm sorry, and move on.
We're running out. We're about out of time. And I want to appreciate the three callers we had in the last few minutes, as well as our guest, Michael Schmidt at the New York Times. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Darren Fletcher, former big league ball player. I appreciate your comments.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks for coming in. And Josh Whitman, former NFL player and U of I law student.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.